Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Start this week's podcast with a special mention to Ben Strang. Ben, thanks for sorting us out a left back, but any chance you can find another one, this one's a little bit broken. A very warm welcome to this week's Under the Abbey Stand. I'm your host, Jordan Warland. Hope you're feeling all right after that rather dismal defeat at home to Bristol Rovers. This week's pod is going to review all the key talking points from that game, look ahead to the real crunch game against Morecambe next weekend, and cover everything January transfer window as well. It seems only fitting that this week's panel, given that we're playing Morecambe on Saturday, is made up of two members of the Cole Stockton fan club. Firstly, we have chairman of the fan club, Tom Walker.
Yeah.
Hello, thanks. Tom.
Good to be back with my proper job title. Looking forward to it.
Are you just prepared?
Good to see the big man. Always good to have a Cole in there.
Are you just prepared for the Twitter mentions to go off when Stockton scores?
Yeah, we haven't seen that for a little while, have we? There we go.
Also on the panel, head cheerleader of the Cole Stockton fan club, complete with outfit and pom-poms, it's Matt Caspel.
Hello, mate. Yeah, how exciting a thing to look forward to, being visited by Cole Stockton, who scored one goal this season. Some things feel a little bit inevitable for next Saturday, maybe.
We can agree on one thing. He is very much due a goal. It's fair to say.
Also, there's some lad at Morecambe that's scoring like loads. Jensen, something. I don't know. I mean, we might touch on that later. We'll see. Right. Plenty to discuss. But before we get going with the gruesome stuff, I thought we'd start with some light-hearted homework. Saturday saw debut for United for Seddon. It lasted all of, 46 minutes? I thought with that in mind, and with the suspected fractured cheekbone and everything, I'd ask the panel if they can remember any other lone stars for Cambridge United that didn't spend too many minutes on the pitch. Matt Caspel, the man of stats, the man of research, loves a good challenge. I think you've got a couple of names for us.
You calling these people stars is pretty loose, I would say. The player I dredged up from my memory, who's also come up on the message board a bit, is actually the goalkeeper, Jesse Joranen, who obviously featured for a grand total of 0 minutes. I can't remember who the game was against, but on his listing on Transfer Market, he joined the club on February the 22nd and then left on February the 23rd, which tells you everything you need to know. So I think doesn't quite fit your criteria, but it's definitely the shortest loan probably we've ever had, in a sense of being maybe only 24 hours or maybe less.
I think we can count minutes on the bench as minutes for the sake of the question.
But I can't remember now whether he actually did he flounce completely or was he on the bench. I can't remember if he was on the bench and then stayed on the bench or if he actually just got in his car and left. Tom's nodding, so it's better that way. No one can work this one out anyway.
Tom, do you have any names for us? The more obscure, the better, please.
Yeah, I think the first thing to note is there was actually a period of 2 years, I guess, late money, early Derry, where we signed, I think went through a period of signing about 30 loan players who all could probably have we'll probably feel hard done by not to have got more of a mensch in this part of the show. Actually, one that came up while Caspel was talking was Ishmael Yakubu.
Great.
Yeah, he also didn't play, didn't make a single appearance.
That's great.
Had him on loan in 2011 from Newport. But I was thinking along the lines of sort of debuts of loan players. And I thought about Tom Naylor. Had him on loan. It was actually a similar situation. I think he was filling an injury crisis in centre mid. Got sent off on debut against Luton. So good start. Admittedly, he'll probably feel better the day after than poor Steve Seddon does. But I think the history of Cambridge United is littered with people who have come in and made little to no impact on loan. So yeah, it's a historic list.
Brilliant. Thank you both. And if anyone listening has any other names, at AbbeyStandPod on Twitter, please. We'd love to hear from them. That is the same address to get hold of us with your questions. Loads of you have sent questions in for this week's pod, so we'll try and mention as many of those as we go. And thank you for reaching out. I guess let's start with Saturday then. Defeat at home to Bristol Rovers, despite going ahead early with a rather nicely worked goal. All went a bit wrong from 20 minutes onwards. We start, as always, with our main man, Tom Walker, and your hot takes from Saturday, please.
These hot takes are going from being sharp, biting points and insights to just blunt, depressing dilge, basically.
We'll be the judge of that, Tom. We'll be the judge of that.
No, trust me.
Just let us know if you need a cuddle, mate.
At some point, that is probably going to be needed. I think the main sense that I kind of had during the game, and I've had the pleasure and the opportunity to chat to Casper about it on the way back. Even though we're not in the bottom four, and even though we've not been in the bottom four all season, and we've mentioned plenty of times we've not been in the bottom four since we got promoted, it kind of feels a bit inevitable that we're going to get relegated. There's so many characteristics of this team and kind of this season that just feel like, in a season review of a team that gets relegated, these things would have to be there. You know, if there's like a bingo card of what you need to get relegated, we've probably got a full house now. You know, whether it's bad fortune or injuries, which we have had, whether it's a poor transfer window costing us, whether it's key players not performing, poor defending, individual mistakes, inability to score goals or inability to consistently score goals. Yeah, we've just kind of got the lot. So that is, you know, if you can call that a hot take, that's a hot take. But as I promised you guys just a moment ago, it's probably more just sort of depressing nonsense at this point because we're not in the bottom four. But yeah, that's as good as I've got for you this week, Jord. We're struggling.
Mate, Matt was worried that we wouldn't mention relegation early enough in the pod, but we've managed to get it in the first 5-6 minutes. So we're onto a barnstormer already. It felt like Saturday, those first 15 minutes were great. And it was a really sort of merited response to being absolutely drubbed 5-0 the game before. And then 20 minutes onwards, we just returned to type, didn't we? You know, the Cambridge of the last few months, which is poor in defence, easy to cut open, and a midfield that was lacking sort of defensive cover, but also creative options going forward. Try and throw in some positives to this pod this week, Matt, because there's a lot of sort of, dare I say, bleak questions coming up. But let's focus on those opening 15 minutes for a second, because they were all right, I thought. In fact, better than all right, I would say, up there with some of the best minutes that we've played so far this season. Do you think there's anything from that that gives you any sort of optimism? Or am I being a little bit naive here? Or do you think that actually there was something in that 15 minutes that perhaps we could build on over the upcoming weeks?
Hopefully something to build on, right? Like, it's hard to pull too many positives out of the round of the game yesterday. But the players should be able to take heart from the fact that for that 15-20 minute period, we were miles ahead of what is a fairly strong, sort of decent mid-table team in the division. And, you know, you point out we're coming off the back of a 5-0 defeat. Confidence is rightly maybe a bit low. We're a little bit patchwork in terms of putting the team together and the shape of the team and the personnel. So it was a really encouraging start. But obviously really felt like we needed a second goal. And it actually, to be fair, felt like that's perhaps what the actual thought process was, because we started fast, high energy. I actually said, I think after about 15 minutes, I thought we'd put more high quality balls into the box through either set piece or from wide positions in the first 15 minutes of the game, maybe than we have in the entire rest of the season so far, which you could see as optimistic or maybe incredibly pessimistic, depending on your angle. But it was a really sort of bright, encouraging start. I'm afraid it's just one of those things at the moment when confidence is where it is. The moment we conceded the goal, everything kind of changed. And actually, it felt like we had perhaps set out into the game. Now, obviously, you want to keep it tight. You don't want to concede goals. But I think the way we had set up to approach the game is very much, we will score more goals than you. Like, we need to continue to carry an attacking threat. And unfortunately, we kind of, I guess, through confidence, and Bristol Rovers are a good side, like, they're decent. We kind of lost our way on it. So I actually think once you've gone 2-1 down, it's the wrong time to change your way of playing the game. We kind of needed to get back to how we started the game and just try and be as aggressive as possible. But then I guess the flip side to that is when we start talking about the goals, which I know we're going to do in a moment, I'm going to complain about how overcommitted and how many bodies we had too high up the pitch. So it is a bit of it's an interesting thing. There's a reason we're all sat here and we're not football managers or football players or whatever it is, which is, I think, is a lot harder than maybe give a credit for. Because bear in mind, at the start of the season, right?
Mate, I'm not a football player because I'm a fat bastard, but, you know, I like your description much better.
The thing for us is that, bear in mind, the start of the season, we started the season really well, but there were still a lot of gripes and grumbles about these defensive mistakes we were making, because we were trying to play the ball out from the back and we kept getting shut down, and particularly like Portsmouth away back in September, a game where, astonishingly, we went top of the league for about 20 minutes. You know,
I've forgotten that.
Yeah, we were top. I know. We were top, and I guess by that same measure, we have been in the relegation zone, because we were for about 5 minutes against Shrewsbury. I guess my point is, we were playing sort of progressive play out from the back football then, but we had some frailties and we were being picked off and we were conceding some really, really shitty goals. Now kind of feels like we've gone the other way. Like we seem to now not be conceding like really poor goals, certainly not as frequently as we were at the start of the season. But also, we're playing a sort of fairly bland, direct, uninspiring style of football, aside from that sort of first 15 minutes yesterday. So, I mean, I guess to loop back around, you have to draw the positives out of that 15 minutes. Like, you, in a way, hopefully that's some of the discussion after the game, was like, look what we are capable of when we put our game on people. You know, when we get the ball down, get it wide and run at them. The goal is exactly that. It's just directly, quickly out to the wing, quickly crossed into the box, no cutbacks, no extra touches. Like, there was no surplus football. It was very much like the leanest version of the goal that it could be. Played up the line, smashed across the box, headed into the corner. Exactly the sort of stuff you quite like to see. So hopefully they can take encouragement from that first 15 minutes and we can roll that out next week. So it's a big one.
Yeah, it felt like the goal was like the first time that I can remember that we've properly exploited a team playing a back three and finding that space in behind where sort of a fullback should be. Plenty of back three talk coming up. We're going to talk about obviously the team and the issues that the team have and how that relates to the goals that we conceded yesterday. But before we do that, Casper, I do want to just touch on the second half. On Saturday, didn't really create a lot of chances apart from the Smith one, which was frustrating. But then what really sort of kicks you when you're down and ties into Tom's sort of checklist of things that happen for relegation teams, it looked like a pretty stonewall pen that we were denied. And now you've got some feelings on this one. Talk me through how the recovery is going, having watched back the highlights several times today.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of screenshotting and still framing. It's exhausting. It's definitely a penalty. It hits both of the guys' arms. Hits them both separately, if you know what I mean, from one arm to the other. And I guess those are the sort of moments that perhaps, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but they go against you when you're having a sort of bad run. The ref is so close to it as well. He has literally the perfect perspective. I think the only thing that hinders it as an all-round penalty appeal is that I couldn't really see that it was a handball from the home end. I just sort of, it's like a good sort of cricket LBW appeal or a caught behind appeal. You're just going up with your mates. Like, it's your kind of job when you're in the home end is just to go along with any old appeal that you can. And so the appeal wasn't like one of those raw sort of massively ferocious appeals you get when some complete crime has been committed, but definitely a penalty. I think the second half, like, looking a bit better than them, I just felt like Bristol Rovers were in second gear. They kind of shut the game down, particularly last 10, 15 minutes. I thought it was amazing. Like, it's a it's a piece of data that's getting a lot of traction at the moment, is like, how much time does the ball spend in play versus not? I think Bristol Rovers were very, very effective at just killing the game off, and every set piece taking about a minute and just really running the clock down. So although they were quite direct and not the most sort of pleasing on the eye team, it's definitely, there's a bit of a blueprint there maybe.
Tom, post-game, you did a rather good Twitter piece, and I thought that might flow into your hot takes at the start of this pod. But in that, you mentioned formation, you talked about possibly three at the back, you know, welcome to the club. We've had a question, sorry, from Mark, which is around formation that I thought would be good to get your thoughts on.
Sorry, George, just very quickly, can I butt in there? What's Mark's last name?
Mate, I haven't written it down on the running order, mate.
It's not Bonner, is it? Because that is truly worrying, if it is.
I wondered where you were going with that joke for a second there. If it was going to be like some ridiculously difficult surname that I wouldn't have a clue how to say.
No, I'm being deadly serious. This is not a joke. If that is Mark Bonner, we're in more trouble than I thought we were.
Mark Bonner doesn't tweet us, right? You know from the night out in London, he doesn't tweet us when we ask him if he wants to go for a pint. Anyway, so... A different Mark has asked about the other Mark. Do you think the management team are too stubborn in constantly playing the 4-2-3-1 and the shoehorning of players like Nibs into the number 10 role? And I'm going to expand on that by saying it was frustrating yesterday to see the formation stay the same, but chucking Ironside up top and moving Smith out wide when Smith was having a good game. You know, Smith, who knew that Smith in the transfer window is a good player. But anyway, back to that sort of 4-2-3-1 question, please, Tom.
Yeah, I think there's a few considerations. I guess the first being that, you know, we've talked about a little bit already, the start to the game, which was, you know, certainly the first 15 minutes, I think, was probably the best football we played at any point in the season, really. And that came using that formation. And, I think as Caswell rightly says, you don't just kind of scrap everything and sort of throw the baby out of the bathwater just because you concede a couple of goals. You feel like you've set up in a way that is hurting Bristol Rovers, and then you concede a couple of goals, and then, you know, in a sense, I can understand why you wouldn't just change it immediately. So I can understand from that perspective why he stuck with it for most of the game anyway. But I think with that formation, it does become very, very ineffective very, very quickly when we're not kind of playing at the tempo that we were at the start of the game. And I think the reason that we've not seen more experimentation with three at the back is just a mindset thing with Bonner. I think a lot of it is we've tried it and been kind of burned in the past with it. And I think that's maybe weighing a little heavy in some of the decision-making. I think even though the football we played at the end of the game wasn't as good as the football we played at the start of the game, I think there's enough encouragement there in terms of what that three at the back sort of formation can offer to think it is something that's worth trying out. And, you know, obviously the first point is that the two centre-backs we've got at the moment, Taylor and Okadina, are playing well, well below the level that is required. Taylor, because he's probably not quite up to it anyway, and Okadina just seems to be shot of any sort of confidence or sort of any real form. And I feel like if you just have another centre back in there or someone else playing in that role, probably George Williams, as it ended up being on Saturday, it kind of takes a bit of pressure off those two having to deal with opposition forwards. You know, we'd have known before the game yesterday the challenges that you face going up against Bristol Rovers. You know, Coben is a striker who scored against us at their place. He's a handful. He scored goals pretty consistently in the time that he spent on the pitch with them. And Loft, who plays next to him, is obviously a physical challenge as well. So you kind of feel like with two underperforming centre-backs, maybe sometimes it's a case of just give him someone else to help him out. Then a little bit further up the pitch, I think it gives you the chance to use Liam Bennett and Brophy in positions that are probably best at. I think we saw when Bennett first came on at left-back, like he did well and he kind of tried hard. And, there was a lot of huff and puff. But when you got him on the right-hand side, in that wing back role, he's actually affecting the game, and it gives him the opportunity to get forward and get balls into the box. And ultimately, that's what he's been doing at Walsall to really good effect for the first part of the season. If we are going to use him regularly, then you probably want to be maximising the benefit that he has. And you know, it's kind of the same with Brophy. I think there's actually an argument he's a bit better at left back than on the wing. So this is kind of best of both worlds with Brophy. And then further up the pitch, you've kind of got flexibility in how you want to play. And fundamentally and crucially, it does actually allow you to get two strikers on, which I think is something that I've not always been crying out for, but I know it's something that the fan base as a whole is quite interested in. And I don't think long-term or even short-term, that'll be Smith and Ironside. I think it will be Smith and another. And that's important. And then obviously it gives you that opportunity to get Lancaster in behind them. He's obviously got a new contract during the week. He's clearly someone that we rate. So if you rate him highly enough to give him a contract based on what's been a pretty minimal amount of football over the last sort of 18 months, you obviously think he's got something in his locker that can actually help win you games. So get him on the pitch. And this feels like the only way you can really do all those things, which is get the wide players in their best positions, Brophy and Bennett, take the pressure off the centre-backs and give you that sort of flexibility in the forward areas, whether it be two strikers in Lancaster, whether it be two attacking midfield players behind one, whatever it looks like, it feels like a good way to go. And I feel like in terms of Bonner specifically, the one thing that I think builds pressure on a manager like nothing else is when it feels like they're just not changing things. Yeah. And when it feels like you're kind of going into games just doing the same things, expecting a different result, which famously is the definition of madness. So, yeah, it's certainly something I'll be looking into. And as you mentioned at the start, George, I know you've been in this club for a long time. So from my side, it's very much if I can't beat him, join him. And I think we are at that point now.
You're welcome. Come on in, mate. Come on in. All welcome here. There was a question I was going to ask you later in the pod, Tom, but it seems like a good point to ask you now, actually. Talking about just then about possibly having two up top. Someone tweeted in, I can't remember now because I didn't add it to the running order because it's quite late, but I'll ask it anyway. They asked, do you think sort of Smith and Ironside could work as a two? And then the other thing that I'm really interested to get your thoughts on, because you and I spoke about this earlier in the week. Mark Bonner has come out and said that striker isn't on the cards for sort of this transfer window. I'd like to get your thoughts on that one, because obviously you mentioned just there, you see it as Smith and another up top.
And Cole Stockton's available.
Yeah, after he sinks us on Saturday, we could maybe get Stockton.
Yeah, I think we maybe need to reevaluate that one. I mean, it's probably also a good chance to give some praise to Smith, because he looks like he's really pulled his finger out over the last few weeks. Obviously, Derby and Sheffield Wednesday weren't easy games for him. They weren't easy games for anyone. But, you know, in terms of the way of playing against Shrewsbury, it kind of was everything we wanted. And he was the best player on the pitch from our side against Bristol Rovers. Obviously, gets his goal. And he's obviously working hard and everything else comes through him, whether it be the sort of move that led to the penalty or whether it be the chance that clipped the bar in the second half. He, at the moment, is our main goal threat. But aside from that, like, the group of strikers we've got evidently are not good enough. You know, we've had our say on Janna. I don't really see him getting too many more minutes for the rest of the season. And Ironside, I think, just looks, I don't know whether it's a form thing or whether it's just, like with maybe other members of the squad, just a bit of a reverting to the mean in terms of last season. They played a long way above their level, or feels like they played a long way above their level, given everything for the club. And we're maybe just seeing a bit of a fallback to where maybe they are, really. And if it's the latter, then there needs to be some thought going into bringing someone better in. Because like even it's a difficult one with Joe. It's like we saw against Shrewsbury, good, you know, kind of what you want to see from him. He came on and changed the game to a certain extent, played a big part in getting level in that game. And then against Bristol Rovers, I kind of feel like his time on this pitch was basically just spent fouling people. Other than the one where he got away, which wasn't a foul, but was given as a foul. But other than that, like, he's either backing into his man, pulling someone's shirt, giving away fouls. And when, like, you're trying to build up head of steam, it's not good enough. We need someone who's just a bit cuter in those moments and kind of has a bit more nous at this level. So that'd be something I would be surprised they're not looking into already. I know maybe it's been mentioned, it's not a priority. It's probably not the priority, but it's certainly an area I think we need strengthening. The midfield is an area it also needs bolstering. And I think if that's not done during next week, then we are in big trouble, because the options we have available to us at the moment, whatever combination of it you do, it's just not working. It's just not happening. And, you know, we'll talk in detail about the Morecambe game. But if you go into a game like that without the right level of quality on the pitch to beat, you know, another team who are definitely going to be in and around us for the rest of this season, and you lose that game, then you're in a world of trouble. So that needs to be something that is done quickly. And, you know, I guess to answer the question a little bit, I'd like both.
I've got a few questions for you on the midfield in a second. But before that, I just want to get Caspel's take on sort of the whole structure of the team. And incidentally, the question I was going to ask you, Matt, that came in from on Twitter was from another Mark. And again, I can't remember his surname, but I'm pretty sure it's not Bonner. Mark asked, we've lost a lot of games by one goal. Are you reassured that means if we recruit well, there's not too much between us and the mid-table sides? Or is it more worrying that we're a soft touch, whoever the players are? Losing a lot of games by that one goal margin. Obviously, that was the same on Saturday against Bristol. I believe you have some stats as well as some opinion on this topic.
Are you sure all these marks aren't like joined Twitter yesterday? Like
Mark 2333346.
Yeah, joined yesterday, one tweet at UTAS. Because if they are, this needs a thorough investigation, is the first thing I'll say.
This is why we don't win FSA awards, mate. We don't audit our questions.
That's it. This losses by one goal margin thing really, really sent me down the rabbit hole this afternoon. You know, in amongst all the sort of Sunday chores, the shopping, the sort of attempts at childcare that I'm sort of forced to do now, obliged, some might say. So I started digging around and it's all pretty depressing stuff, this. So sort of put a trigger warning in now. Maybe just, you know, skip the next 2 minutes if you have a nervous disposition. So yeah, 8 losses this season already by one goal margin versus 7 in the entirety of last season. Obviously, you'd rather lose by one goal margin than a 2-3 or a 4-5. So there's a silver lining, I guess. According to the 538 project, which is this like predictive modeling website that predicts all kinds of stuff, including like presidential races and all sorts of interesting stuff. We have a 61% chance of relegation now. And we have the second worst team in the division, apparently, only after Forest Green. So,
who beat us recently? Nice.
Yeah. Isn't like tomorrow is supposed to be one of the depressing days of the year as well? Or is that the following?
Is it Blue Monday?
I don't know. It will be by the time I finish this. When you look at things like, you love XG, Jules, you're going to love this next part. When you look at stuff that we are in the bottom 4 in terms of like ranked out of all the other teams in League One, obviously we're bottom for the number of losses, joint with a couple of others. I think it's FGR and MK. We've lost 15 games. We only lost 18 games total last season. We're on course to lose 28 games. No one this century has stayed up in League One with 28 losses. The most lost was Notts County in 2013-14 with 26. We failed to score in 12 of our 25 games. That is a league table we have been consistently top of all season. That's pretty bleak. We haven't scored in 7 of our 12 home games in the league. And as someone pointed out in the message board, we haven't scored in the league in front of the home end, the Newmarket Road end, since August. Which, considering I also personally didn't go to the FA Cup game, so I actually haven't witnessed like a goal in front of me for a while.
Excuse if you're in the South Habin, mate. I'm seeing lots of great goals.
You're getting all the
some
action
for there. Our team.
Yeah, some of which are for us. A few other things we are in the bottom 4 for, I'll just rattle through. XG against, so expected goals to concede. XG at home. Second half and first half performances. So if you measured the league based on only second halves or first halves, not great. Bottom for away form, 2 wins, 1 draw, 9 losses. We've been drawing or losing 21 out of 25 games at halftime. And we're bottom of the league for winning half time at home. So only twice have we been winning home at half time. We've been losing 7 of those games. We've been losing at half time, and then 4 of them we've been drawing. make of all of that what you will, I guess.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
That's it. There are a few stats that we're not. It's not entirely bleak. Bear in mind the league table. We are not in the relegation zone. So
what about the one goal difference? Sort of losing by one goal. Is that something?
No.
Does that give you some encouragement? Or
No. We're not losing 2-3, 4-0 every week, which is good. So that's basic. I think games like yesterday are maybe an example of that playing out. That's kind of a typical like loss by a single goal. Bristol Rovers probably could have beaten us by 2 or 3 goals, but they had a sort of low risk appetite in that second half. That meant we had quite a lot of the balls. We won a few corners, set pieces, a few promising moments like the odd ball into the box, arguably a penalty to be fair. But we didn't, again, we're not carving out these chances where people are like getting good shots away on target and we were seeing their keeper pulling off all these saves. It's very much like teams are containing us really effectively. And I guess an output of that is we're going to lose quite a few games by slender margins, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. We've got to try and pick this up, Tom, from all those stats. Let's talk about the midfield. I said we would. Couple of queries on the way that we're currently set up. Start with Digby and Warman as a pairing. How are you feeling about that one? Is it working for you?
It's not working for Mark Bonner, I'll tell you that much.
This is the same centre midfield pairing that started at Newcastle a year ago today as we record, by the way. So make it out what you will.
Yeah. I think with the midfield, like just taking it as kind of a whole, I mean, obviously the players we've got available to us at the moment are Digby, Simper and Warman. So when you have Digby and Warman making probably 60 appearances between them, Simper and Warman making 60 appearances between them, I mean, you need Paul Digby to be playing like 11 out of 10 to like support them and make sure that they're not relied upon too much. That's not because I don't think they have ability or they're not good enough. They've shown in patches that they can be. But if you're having players of that level of experience being that bigger part of your team, I think that's a reason you're in trouble. I mean, in terms of the actual partnership, I mean, Digby was way, way off it. Has been for a little while, but was pretty dreadful against Bristol Rovers in pretty much every aspect, I think. Probably the one thing he did well was actually not get sent off. And that's not a massive resounding compliment. So that's another example of a key player from last season and the last couple of years who is just well off the boil. I'd probably put him into the category of someone who I think can do better, has done better, and I believe has the ability at this level to be a decent player. So to me, it's more of a form thing and I guess gives you confidence that he will again, hopefully at some point in the season, be a decent part of the team. And then it's just about who partners him. I kind of see Simper and Warman as being fairly interchangeable. I think Simper probably has an edge. Maybe
would you give him a go, the pair of them as a midfield duo there? That's a question that we've had come in as well. Like, would you consider playing Warman and Simper as your two midfielders? They are similar, obviously, in profile and age and number of appearances, but in the way they play, they're different. So do you think them not getting the nod is purely down to the fact, you know, they are young and inexperienced?
I think based on the merits of who else is going to come in, which is basically just Digby, like, you'd probably say yes. Like, maybe in fairness, there's an argument for it. It feels to me like it would probably be a bad move. We've obviously not seen it, so you know there's no evidence for that. But just based on my sort of perception of this level, I kind of feel like having two players of that sort of age and sort of experience profile more than anything is maybe not the right way to go. I'll say again, and I know it's been mentioned in the build up to January, it was said by us and by listeners in the summer, and I think last January as well, we just got to bring someone in there, and we've just got to get it right as well. You know, we can talk about whether it's Digby and Simper, Digby and Warman and Simper, but like, I think we've seen over a long enough part of this season, whatever combination of them it is, it's not going to be good enough over the course of sort of, well, whatever's left, like 15 to 25 games. So bring someone in who's got quality, bring someone in who can stay fit, for God's sake, and just make sure that it gets better, because like that, I think, is probably the key part of the reason why we are where we are, to be honest. The centre-back issue is one that we don't have much control over, unfortunately, because we brought, I think, as a group, the centre-backs we started the season with were good enough, but the centre-mid area was something we've just essentially cocked up to the point that we are where we are. So, yeah, I mean, I guess looking at the midfield, you know, I kind of rather stay away from analysing which of our players should be the combination and just focus on the fact that we just need to get someone else in, because I think that's become pretty clearly obvious for quite a while now.
Matt, Tom was just talking about sort of central defence and the defence in general didn't have the best day on Saturday. There were some bright spots, obviously, you know, Bennett came on, made quite an impact in his sort of 50-60 minutes that he had, but for the most part wasn't a good day at the office for the centre backs. Both goals that we conceded showed how easily we can be cut open with quite sort of simple through balls. That yes, there's an argument that Bristol Rovers front two are very good. Your guy Collins has got what, 13 goals and 10 assists or something like that. And also there's definitely questions about the second goal and an offside in the build up. But putting those to one side, you know, where do we stand in sort of sorting this out in terms of, you know, getting our defence back on track? Do you feel we've been let down by senior players, people like Taylor and Williams? And then finally, on the whole sort of centre-back area, how crucial a signing do you think Ryan Bennett is? Because, you know, we haven't mentioned him in the pod yet, but he joined last week.
Yeah, a lot to get through there. I mean, firstly, on the goals we conceded, I think always it's different earlier in the season, right? So earlier the season, we were conceding quite a few goals where you'd attribute maybe 90% of the blame to like one player. It was like someone was clearly at fault for the goals. What we saw yesterday was, it's more like a systemic breakdown. So like everything I said earlier about starting really positively and being attacking and staying attacking, I promised I was going to properly contradict myself, so I might as well get on with it. One of my many screenshots I shared on the group chat earlier, which I'm sure you guys were enjoying, especially with all the circles I drew in the highlighting, was to question why for the first goal, obviously the play breaks down in their third, but both Digby and Warman are in front of the ball or arguably level with the ball when that breakdown occurs. I guess maybe I'm old school, I don't know, but I feel like when you've got two centre midfielders in that almost like a pivot, one of them has to sit deep. Like one of them should always be sat in and around the halfway line area, you know, actually avoid the temptation to get drawn forward into attack, because you have to just sit there and be prepared for play to break down so that you can do something about it. And then Warman, to be fair, probably has the opportunity to foul the guy who's on the run. I think he even probably did foul him and tried to foul him. I swear to God, we're the worst team in these situations. I look at other teams, maybe it's just blinkers, but I look at other teams, I swear they just comprehensively...
We can't even foul right.
We can't even foul right. Like Bristol Rovers on the flip side are probably very good at doing that. They seem to break apart a lot of what we did that was promising, seemed to get just sort of ended, basically. So we couldn't even quite get that right. And from there, yeah, it's just a mess, to be honest. Like, people are pulled out of position. But I do think, I'll be kind to the back four and the centre-backs, they shouldn't be left in that situation where you're just left with just your four back line. You know, of the seven players who were ahead of the ball when the play broke down, not a single one of them managed to get back behind the ball before the ball was in the back of the net. So it only got worse and worse, basically. So I don't know. I think it's a bit harsh to be too hard on any of the defenders specifically for the first goal. Second goal, I don't think it was offside for starters. More screenshots that I've got to support that. It was perhaps a bit concerning to hear Bonner talking about that. It was very out of character for him, just like him signing up for all these Twitter accounts and tweeting us as well. I mean, change your name, mate. Don't, you know, doesn't have to be Mark, does it?
Mark with a C. Go Mark with a C.
Mark with a C. Yeah, anything. There's a lot that still goes wrong in that second. My point is, even if you think the guy's offside or not, just don't concede from there. Like, they still just have the ball like around the halfway line, and we have plenty of players behind the ball. Seddon comes charging out, doesn't get anywhere near the play, and then is completely taken out of the game. Just, I sort of think when we're, you know, at this point it's 1-1 and you've just conceded, and you should be trying to be pretty conservative maybe in how you defend the game. Just stay inside your players, like show your players wide. If they shoot from 30 yards and they score, it's like, fair enough. Like, all right, you've scored a screamer. Just really defend the box. Don't worry about trying to break the play up. And it's Seddon so hard at the pitch when he sort of doesn't even really intercept the ball at all. And from there, it's all downhill. Great cross, great finish from them, to be fair. Yeah.
Just a quick note before we look ahead to the Morecambe game on Seddon. Tom, what do we do now? This sort of left back is going to be out. What is a fractured cheekbone? Mumps? Send him back to Oxford, try and find another one. What's your take on that?
Yeah, when I mentioned earlier in the pod that this season kind of feels like there's a lot of characteristics that you would analyse in a relegation end of season review. I mean, this just kind of sums the whole thing up, doesn't it? You're crying out for a left back, you finally go and sign one, and they're stretched off less than half into their debut. How is your luck? Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of what you do, obviously it sounds like it's pretty nasty. That's the first thing. So, you know, best wishes to him, of course. You know, whenever someone's sort of stretched off and gets straight in an ambulance off to hospital, you know, it's not a good situation. So that'll be looked at, I guess, over the next 1 or 2 days. I don't know what loan agreements are like. I don't know if we can just cut it short if he is injured. I would like to think that is an option. You know, what do you call it? Goodwill period, something like that.
I think they call it the Jesse Yorinen rule.
Yeah.
It's like a lemon law, 24 hours only, and then you can just send them back.
I think you've got like 14 days, as long as you've kept the receipts, and you can just send it back. Like,
fingers crossed. Maybe there's a clause there that their cheekbone has to be okay, in which case we are truly, truly fucked. You know, I mean, obviously, if he's out for any more than about a month, I mean, you just go and get someone else, probably. I think the other caveat is, and I know it's not fair really for me to judge based on what is literally less than one half of football, but he didn't look great. Like,
didn't look
he looked
great,
like he was struggling and really not able to cope with what Bristol Rovers were kind of sticking on him, really. I mean, that's obviously secondary to the fact that he, you know, his face has basically been broken. I don't know. Like, I guess the other thing is, can he wear some sort of protective
mask or something?
Face
mask.
We did it a lot of times last season. The only one I can remember, the one that always springs to mind when I think of that, is Tim Sills when he scored against us for Torquay. I remember being utterly fuming that he was even allowed to play. I don't know why. In hindsight, it's probably pretty irrational. But yeah, I don't know if there's some sort of solution like that that could be worked out. I probably wouldn't want to play football with a broken cheekbone. So, you know, fair enough if he doesn't either. But yeah, I mean, look, if he, you know, the nature of the loan sign is he's coming to plug a hole for the rest of the season. So if he's injured for a significant chunk of that, we've got to be out and go and getting someone else.
The answer we were looking for, Tom, is go to a back three and play a left wing back because we've got Brophy. So that was the answer we were looking for there.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, that's
thanks
fine.
For your
that's
efforts anyway, mate.
Option. I'm happy with that. I thought I'd got my commitment to the back three cause out of it earlier on, to be honest with you. I didn't realize
you need to sort of shoehorn
that in somehow.
I didn't realize
quite how militant you guys are. Do I have to go and sit on the M25 and glue myself to it as well?
Nah,
please
just
play
just,
a back three.
Just a South Habin, mate. Just a South Habin. Right. Tom may or may not be in a South Habin for the Morecambe game, which comes up this Saturday. We're going to chat about it in a moment. But before then, we sent our boy Swindle to get the insight on Morecambe. And he spoke to someone called Dave Salmon from the Shrimps Live podcast.
Right. I'm joined by Dave Salmon. Dave, great to speak to you again. It doesn't feel like it's been too long since it was just last week, but lovely to have you on again. Just tell all our listeners again who you are and where you're from.
Jack, thanks for having me back on. Really appreciate it. So I am the Morecambe matchday commentator for I Follow Shrimps and also the local radio station. So we follow the team home and away, have done since we got into League One last season. And it's been something of a roller coaster, to say the least. I suppose it has been for you guys too.
It certainly has. It's been up and down, and we seem to be going steadily down at the moment. But yeah, it's really nice to be in League One, and yeah, both our teams with a kind of similar trajectory. So yeah, looking forward, obviously, to when you guys travel down here. Before we do that, on Saturday, another fantastic result for your team, 2-1 at home to Cheltenham. You were saying to me the other day that home form is just what carries you. How important is that, and how important was that result?
Absolutely massive, Jack, to be honest. We were, I think, not quite sunk without trace going into the Christmas period, but it wasn't looking great, to say the least. And if it hadn't have gone well, we could have found ourselves, come New Year's Day, 10, maybe even 12 or 13 points clear of or away from safety. As it turns out, didn't start so great against Port Vale, lost 2-1, probably should have snuck a draw on the day. And then we've had three home games in a row, and we've been absolutely sensational. And I don't use that word lightly. We've been amazing, amazingly good in the last three games. 2-0 against Accrington, then a 5-0 victory against Burton Albion on New Year's Day. Could have been 10 or 12, and it wouldn't have been unfair if we'd have scored at least double what we managed. And then a bit of a different win on Saturday against Cheltenham Town. It was only 2-1, but it was a proper grinding it out, bodies on the line, heart, spirit, determination kind of win. But some of the football we played in the first half was, I would say, some of the best that we've probably ever seen at Morecambe. And I don't say that lightly. Second half was a bit more of a digging, but thoroughly deserved the points. And it's funny how quickly that football can turn, Jack, isn't it? Because just 2 weeks ago, it's doom and gloom. There's no way we're getting anything other than bottom of the league. And now we're 2 points clear of the bottom four. And it's quite the remarkable turnaround, really.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, in that time, you've managed to leapfrog Cambridge United, which happened yesterday, courtesy of our 2-1 home defeat to Bristol Rovers. Not a terrible performance from us in that game, and positives to be taken, but it was another loss, and it was an early lead squandered. So feeling around the club is difficult. And I just want to point out one of the things from your last three games. In each of those games, Jenson Weir's on the score sheet. How important has he been for you? Of course, formerly of Cambridge United. How important has he been this season?
He's been absolutely incredible, Jack, to be perfectly honest. I can see now, the way Jenson is playing for us, I can see why you guys took him on loan last season. And I know he didn't fulfil his potential with you, and he got injured, and then he couldn't get back in the team, and didn't quite work out for him in that regard. But he's been absolutely amazing for us. He scored 9 goals already. We've got him playing as a... well, I suppose he's like the number 10, really. He's just playing just behind our front two. And he's absolutely revelling in the role, really. He's formed a really good bond with Liam Shaw, who's another midfielder we've got on loan from Celtic, who is... well, he's, I think, already championship class probably already. I would be, if he doesn't get in Celtic's first team, he'll be in the championship in a season or two. But Jenson has really blossomed. He's really starting to show his how good he is. And he's obviously been well coached, being part of a Premier League academy at Brighton in the last couple of years. And he's one of our best players. There's no doubt about that. So I feel a bit sorry for him on one hand, Jack, because I think you missed out on his true ability last season. And hopefully he's going to come back to haunt you next weekend too.
I mean, it's all written. It's all written in the stars. He absolutely will score probably a hat-trick the way we're playing at the moment. And just a note on that, on loan players, also someone who seems to be performing really well is Kieran Phillips, another player on loan. He seems really good. And how important is that loan market for you?
It's vital, because we haven't got any money. It's as simple as that. Now, that might change in the next few weeks. If you read certain national newspapers, you'll be familiar with the story that's been circulating at the moment. In fact, the same contingent were at the game yesterday. I actually bumped into the potential prospective new owner, and that's all it is at the moment. And his entourage actually in the club shop after the game yesterday as well. They were buying half the club shop. So... what happens in the next couple of weeks is anybody's guess. Fingers crossed he's got the money to back up what he's saying. But as it stands at the moment, we haven't got any money. And in terms of the transfer window, we have got to rely on loans and shipping one player out to get one player in. But the loans we've got at the moment, we've got 5 of them, and they are all young players. They're all 19, 20 years old. And they're all doing absolutely brilliantly. Kieran Phillips is one of them. He started off the season well, then he didn't score for about 12 games. He was still playing well, but just not finding the back of the net. He was out of the team for a couple of weeks. He's come back in, and now he scored three in the last two matches. So certainly one to watch out for on Saturday.
Yeah, certainly. So looking ahead then to Saturday's game, you did, you know, you raised it before and we said it today that your home form is the thing that's carrying you at the moment. Even with form aside, how are you feeling in your heart of hearts about your trip to Cambridge this weekend?
I'm definitely feeling more positive than what I thought a couple of weeks ago, Jack, that's for sure. The home form is, to an extent, it's masking the poor away form. There's no getting away from that. We've only won once on the road in the league this season. Where at home, we've won four and drew three of the last seven. I think we're top or second in the home form table at the moment, and that shows you the difference between our home and away. I think the fact that we are so close together now in the table, level on points, we couldn't have predicted that a couple of weeks ago. I think that adds extra significance to the game as well. And we're on something of a crest of a wave, to be honest with you, Jack. We are genuinely flying at the moment. Something has clicked. I don't know what it is. I don't want to put the commentator's curse on it either, because we'll probably play terribly now I said this, but something is different now. Whether we've suddenly just clicked and gelled as a team, whether our manager, Derek Adams, has released the shackles a little bit in terms of how attacking we are, because we do like to sit back, absorb pressure, then hit on the break. We are a counter-attacking team. We'll try and hit you with pace when you're in our half, and then we'll go boom and bomb forward. That's how we play. I think it's a combination of a couple of things, really. I think Derek has slightly relaxed his style a bit, gone a bit more attacking. But the best players that we've got have just started to find their feet, and it's taken half the season, and there's a lot of work still to do, long way still to go, of course, but we're certainly a lot more optimistic than what we were maybe two or three weeks ago, in the shadow of the fact we have only won once away in the league all season.
Well, yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting one. Of course, Cambridge ourselves really in need of stopping the rot, and I'm sure Mark Bonner and the players will be, you know, highlighting this as a real chance to do that. But equally, your form is pretty scary at the moment. Looking ahead for you in January, you host Port Vale and then a trip to Ipswich before finishing off the month against Bristol Rovers. So it doesn't get any easier. So, I imagine you'll be seeing this as a real opportunity to further yourselves from the relegation zone.
Absolutely, Jack. With the games coming up, not just in January, we've still got to go away to, I think it's six of the current top eight in the League One. So our away games don't get any easier. It is going to be our home form that's going to keep us in League One for a third season. That said, it's the bread and butter. I think it's what I've said to you in previous times, Jack, isn't it? It's the haves and the have-nots in League One, isn't it? And I think Morecambe and Cambridge, we are in that mini league of the seven or eight clubs in the bottom third. Both of our sides, we need to finish mid-table in that mini league, and we stay up this season. I think it's as simple as that. Maybe given the start that you guys had and you've fallen away and you've been sucked into it, that's possibly a little bit more disappointing for you from your point of view than what you might have thought. But I think from our point of view, we pretty much are where we thought we were going to be, really. We've got actually the same number of points, exactly the same points from 25 games as we did last season, and we stayed up. So there's no reason why we can't do the same again. But certainly we would have to be targeting Saturday as a positive result, that's for sure, given what we've got down the line. Ipswich away, Bristol Rovers, Port, it's not going to be easy. And then we've got Sheffield Wednesday, Derby away in early February as well. So some tricky games coming up. We always enjoy coming to the Abbey. We've not had a great couple of seasons when we come to you. And you always seem to get a dodgy penalty as well. So we'll see what happens.
Fingers crossed. I'll push you for a match prediction then, Dave. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, given everything and the momentum and everything that we've got going on at the moment, and the formation that's clicked, our 3-4-1-2, which we're playing now, we've got two strikers on the pitch where we've only had one on the field for most of the campaign. The fact we've won three on the bounce for the first time ever in League One, and the first time for a couple of seasons as well, I think it's with us, Jack. I'll be honest. I think we are playing you at the right time. And the momentum and everything else that we've got going on, I'm going to say Cambridge United 1, Morecambe 2, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I can't blame you. I like the optimism. And, the way we're playing at the moment, you'll definitely get a few chances to score. Listen, Dave, thanks for joining us. It's been great to talk to you.
No problem at all, Jack. Good luck for the rest of the season after Saturday, and we'll speak to you next time, no doubt.
Cheers.
Right, Thank you very much, Dave, and thank you very much, Swindle. Yeah, important month of games ahead, gents. Obviously, Bristol was a potentially winnable game, but you've got to look at Morecambe now and say that's a must win. Games like Shrewsbury and Lincoln not far off as well. So yeah, it feels like January can be quite a pivotal one for us. Tom, how typical is it, and I'm thinking of your relegation bingo card a little bit here, how typical is it that we are playing Morecambe just as they are bang hitting their form, and how worried are you about this game?
Yeah, so it's an enormous fixture at any point in the season, but particularly given the context of how they're doing and how we're doing respectively. I know what you mean. It feels like they've really kind of come out of the blocks recently. They're actually charged up the table. I mean, pre-Christmas, I think we might even have said as much on one of the pods, like pre-Christmas, you pretty much have to be better than like two teams, because we felt like Forest Green and Morecambe are goners. Obviously, we then have since lost to Forest Green, and Morecambe have got themselves out of it. So it's not aged particularly well, that one. It's aged like milk. But yeah, I mean, the game is probably as big a single league fixture as I can recall. Because I think losing this game would be really, probably more so than what it does for our actual prospects of staying up, because even then, like, you're probably maximum like a point adrift. Even if that's if we even do drop into the bottom three at all, if we do lose on Saturday. So it's not like season over, finished there. But in terms of what it would kind of signify and what it would feel like, it would feel like a bit of a knockout blow. So that's the first thing. I mean, I think, like, we've spent so much time over the last few weeks and months talking about, you know, difficulties in playing teams with bigger budgets and the fact that we can't expect too much, and it's difficult for us to compete with these teams at this level. Like, because we've given the team the benefit of the doubt in those situations, I feel like it's kind of all right here. Just think, like, you've just got to do what you have to do to win this game. I know Morecambe have picked it up recently, but, like, they're not a good team. We saw it earlier in the season. They're not at this level a team that we should be concerning ourselves too much about. You know, conversely, we go into this fixture as the ones with the bigger budget. So maybe Dave Salmon on the Shrimps Live podcast will be talking about what a challenge.
Mate,
it is.
I was just thinking, I would hate to listen to their podcast and hear what they're saying about us and how they must be looking at this game and being like, yes, we can do this lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried. Like, of course I'm worried. Like I say, I mean, the downside of losing feels like that it would feel like at full time that is kind of it. And that's kind of one of those losses that you look back on and go, oh, well, as soon as we lost to Morecambe, I kind of knew that we were done. But at the same time, like, it's not as catastrophic as that. I've seen a few people say that if we lose on Saturday, like, it's done. I mean, there is
one of the questions I've got in the running order. Like, I'll probably cut that now.
Like, that's a stupid way to think. There's a world in which we lose against Morecambe, we're not in the bottom four. But, you know, I guess in a sense it's a game where it is kind of a must win. It's a six pointer and you want to be coming out with that with everything. But there's maybe also a train of thought that because of the time of the season it is and because of how we're playing compared to them, it's a game that if you can't win, just please do not lose.
That's what I was saying to you on the way back, wasn't it, Tom? I was like, yeah. Do you know what? Like,
I made a note of it. I made a note of it while you were like, on zooming down the motorway.
If you draw it's like, if you draw that game, it will feel bad. Like, it will still not feel great. But it's like a 0-0 draw, or even like we went 1-0 down, came back and got a point draw. It's depressing it's come to this because it's fucking Morecambe at home. But it's still a positive result. It's just all about context, isn't it? As you say, it's like the one thing I find interesting, I wonder how much a team's form, like, around the transfer window has an impact on their ability to sign players. Because right now, like, if we do lose to Morecambe on Saturday, maybe even, like, we're trying to get a pick up loans from Premiership clubs, are they just going to look at us and be like, why? Like, I don't want to send this, like, 19-year-old into this relegation dogfight that you're stuck in. So I don't think it's going to be the most positive experience for them. I don't know. It's a thought aloud.
Well, how are you feeling about the game itself, Matt?
Not great. Yeah, I think Tom kind of nailed it. It's like a weird spectrum.
but very heavily loaded on like the weight of a defeat and the sense of dread around a defeat far outweighs the, if we do just go and win, we're just beating Morecambe at home, we'll still be only like 3 or 4 points at best off the drop zone. So it hasn't like, it's the same as what Tom was saying. It's not like if we lose, I'll ruin your question completely now. If we lose, no, it doesn't mean we're going to get relegated, in the same way that if we win, it doesn't mean, yes, we are going to stay up. So anyone who says losing on Saturday means relegation, surely by that same logic means if we win, we'll stay up. So they're simple people, basically.
I've scrapped that question.
It's now. Gone. But, it just makes no sense.
but what I will ask you, Matt, is a question that Stuart tweeted in. And I'm pretty sure it's Stuart and it's not just Mark Bonner. Come up with another name, similar to what Tom's been banging on about all podcasts with his relegation bingo card. Does this season to you have a feel of a relegation season about it? Like bad luck, poor defensive performances, the injury nightmare, issues with referees, you know, lack of quality, loss of form, the whole Rotherham Bonner situation as well. Like, are you sat there with your own bingo card saying this feels like a relegation season?
It's got a lot of the hallmarks, but this is exactly what they'll be saying at Cheltenham, at Lincoln, at Accrington. Like, I think we, as football fans, we're very dialed into our own club and we see all our own games. We don't really watch anyone else's. We don't realistically actually really know what's going on at any of the other clubs. You know, MK fans will be deeper in the hole than we are. They'll be down a bigger pit of despair than we are.
They deserve to be in that pit.
Well, though. Yeah, I'm not even going to.
We're good people.
Well,
most of the time.
I don't know about that. That's not open. That's a whole other pod in its own right. My point stands, though. Like, we're very in our own world as a fan base, which makes complete sense. Like, I'm not there reading anyone else's forum. I'm not tracking anyone else's injuries or anything like this. So, yes, we've had a lot of injuries, but maybe someone else has. Yes, Bonner talking to Rotherham. Maybe seemingly has had some disruptive influence on the squad, but MK lost their manager. So, you know, is that not more disruptive to just lose someone completely? I don't know. I think my point is, it's very easy to feel like your own club is bound to get relegated. You know what I mean? Like, or bound to mess up promotion. Like, with, you know, when you're up and around it, you feel like everyone else is going to get, that everyone else is going to win all their games. We're not going to win any of our games. It's very realistic. I feel that way a lot, you know. I'm nervous about Saturday because it doesn't have a lot of upside for us, really. Like, a win will just be a relief. A loss will be hit you like a sledge, basically. But it's just important to remember there are other teams around us who are in just as bad form, including Peterborough, who are right down below us in the form table. So as bad as it feels and as nervous as we might all collectively be, just think about how good it's going to feel like if we do beat Morecambe and then we go on a little bit of a run at some point. We've got that massive run of games in March. Like, it, you know, it's that thing. If we get relegated, it's probably because we deserve it. It's probably because we haven't hit the standards we need to. And I think, depressing, there's probably worse to come. The only game I can equate to is, you'll remember this, Joe, particularly, is that, remember that Kidderminster home game? When we were getting relegated out of the Football League. It's a long
I
remember the away one.
Really well.
I broke my hat in the celebration. The home one, they had 10 men, and I think it was like 1-1 at the time, and then they went on to win 3-1. Mm. And that was like end of January. That season, I think, or like start of February. And that, at the time, and in retrospect, was very much like, that was the one, right, wasn't it? Like, that was like a... But we were... I would dredge out the league table. I think we were in a much worse state then than we are now in terms of league table and even form, to be honest. Like, we've got 4 points out of the last 5 games. It's not like a complete catastrophe. The other thing I'll say from the Bristol Rovers game, it's obviously disappointing. It's not good to lose at home. They were a decent team, but they're not like, they're not tearing up the division. We played so much better still in that game than we have for so many months. Like, we did create chances, we did get some shots away, tons of set pieces, actually a really high quality of set piece, like great corners, quite threatening for most of the game. We've moved around this corner, I think we're now hopefully going to see it on Saturday when we play Morecambe, fingers crossed, basically.
Tom, we've been chatting for the best part of an hour and we've not touched on Morecambe's goal machine, your favourite. No, not that one. The other one. I'm talking about Jensen Weir. Harren, if my maths is correct, Jensen Weir has more goals this season than Nibs and Ironside combined. How's that make you feel, mate? How are you feeling about that one?
Congratulations to him. We signed him
I like that.
We signed him last summer on the basis that he would contribute more goals than Hiram Boateng, or so I'm led to believe, or so we're led to believe, which were essentially our two options. And to be fair, we've been proven right on that. It's a shame we've been proven right while he's playing for one of our relegation rivals. But that, as they say, is indeed the real quiz. I mean, look, he's done well while he's there. He's obviously going to be one to watch. I can't really say too much more. Centre mid's been our problem all season. At the moment, it looks like we're going to really struggle to combat him. And, you know, you would like to think that there's somebody there in the next 3 or 4 days who will be able to counter that threat. So, guys.
Yeah, I was going to ask you both, like, does this feel like with the time that we've got available ahead of the Morecambe game to make signings and also the Morecambe game itself on Saturday, does this feel like potentially the biggest 7 days in Mark Bonner's reign as Cambridge United manager?
Yeah, a bit. I think, a lot of it is going to be our perception rather than like what it actually means for the rest of the season, in that if we don't bring a centre mid in during the week and we do lose against Morecambe, like the perception is going to be that we are beyond help, basically. But the reality is you might bring one in the week after and then go and pick up 4 points from 2 games and suddenly it looks sort of a little bit rosier. I kind of understand that sentiment. I think I would maybe stretch it out a bit further. I would say the next 7 games would maybe be bigger for Mark Bonner than the 7 days, because I think ultimately the next 7 to 8 games or 8 to 10 weeks, whatever sort of time frame you want to put on it, will determine his short-term future.
Do you think he'll get 7 games?
Yeah, I think so. I think he will get January, as in he will get the opportunity to invest in January. He's already obviously been, you know, busy in the market. We've brought in certainly one player in Ryan Bennett, who I think is really gonna be kind of, you know, just what the doctor ordered, basically. Experienced centre back, clearly still got a bit about him. Seddon obviously was plugging a gap, and we don't know what sort of contribution he can have. But the fact is, we're busy.
For all 46 minutes, he plugged it.
The fact is, we've been busy. I expect we'll be busy over the next 3 weeks while the window remains open. And then with that, I think he'll be given at least February to try and turn things round. And then I kind of mentioned it a couple of times, but I think there will come a point where we will have to make a decision. Obviously, that is based on the fact on the assumption that results don't improve, because there is very much a world where, you know, we sign a couple of players that do change our fortunes a bit, and maybe key players come back or key players rediscover a bit of form, and those things combine to an upturn in results. And if that's the case, then, you know, he's obviously done his job, basically. So, you know, maybe not, but I think we are starting to see, you know, in the chat on the forums, in the chat on social media, the questions that we're getting sent in, a bit of an increase in the narrative that it's maybe not just the players that need looking at here. And maybe there is a case that's growing that fresh ideas in the dugout might help change fortunes. I'm not there yet, but I do think we're at a point or approaching a point where it's gone on for long enough now that it's not just a poor run of form. It's maybe a bit more systemic than that. So you would change the personnel, or you know, if we don't have any other choice, we'll have to change the manager. But yeah, we're not there yet. But while we're on doom and gloom, might as well get it in.
Just on Jensen Weir, that creative.
Yeah, sorry. You asked me about Jensen Weir, but
no, I'm moving on. That creative central midfielder, which hopefully comes in this week, but definitely needs to come in this window. Would you go for a youngster from a Prem club like a Jensen Weir, or are you digging your heels in the sand and saying, no, I need someone that's got some experience, someone that knows the league?
I find it quite hard to believe that we'll be able to go out and just sign an experienced, established League One midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Probably less because of finance and more just because
Are they available?
Yeah. What player of that sort of profile is going to, oh, Cambridge, that looks good. That looks like a lot of fun. We'll get stuck in there. Unless it's like someone who's maybe been with a club that have been promoted recently, who were maybe playing in a team that were in League One and have good experience in League One, but have found themselves either in a team at the top end of this level or somewhere in the level above that maybe are surplus requirements, in which case you can go out and get someone. I think I'd maybe also debate a little bit the sort of profile midfielder we need. Obviously creative midfielder, granted, like, you know, the squad could do with it. I think the squad could always do with it, but we need a bit of steel in there because it feels like the midfield's been a bit powder puff for a long time. We've obviously talked about Digby being off it. He's been off it for ages. It feels like maybe we need to address that as well. We need someone in there who can really, help to kind of dominate that part of the pitch. You know, we've got players like Lancaster who can create chances. You know, I think Lewis Simper's got decent passing ability. Warman's shown that when he can get forward, he can help out in the forward third of the pitch. Obviously, ultimately, not to the extent that we need, and that's something that's been well documented. But I don't think we should just write off the fact that maybe a defensive midfielder could be useful as well. Not necessarily a defensive midfielder, but just someone with a bit of bite. To be honest, Boateng would be perfect. A fully fit Hiram Boateng would be absolutely ideal for what we need. But yeah, I think I wouldn't like write off the idea of signing loan players because, you know, we've seen plenty of times that they can come in and have a good impact. I think particularly in that part of the pitch, I remember Ryan Ledson a number of years ago, obviously came in, you know, he was literally completely unproven. I think he was like 17 at the time and he offered exactly what was needed, got stuck in, was obviously ready for the men's game and obviously was able to contribute well during that season. It's possible you go out and find a similar sort of player to that who can come in and contribute straight away. The issue that you so often have is that the first loan, if it is a first loan, is basically them getting up to speed. And we can't have passengers like that. We can't have people who are just coming in and sort of finding their feet at this level. We need people who can come in and contribute. And then the other part of that is that when you have someone on loan, particularly if it's from an academy, it always feels a bit grim if, like, while the results aren't going well for you, you're just developing other people's players sort of along the way. And it'd feel like a bit of a kick in the teeth if we sign someone on loan from, like, I don't know, Wolves or something like that, who comes in, doesn't really contribute for us, but their own personal development gains are pretty good. And then they go on somewhere else next season, really smash it while we're sat in League Two on the train to Crewe or something like that. So yeah, I think basically what I would answer that is don't write it off. It's not necessarily something that is definitely a bad thing. If you go and loan in a youngster, it's worked in the past, it can work again. But I would certainly prefer someone who's kind of, I guess it sounds obvious to say, I'd rather have someone who's been there and done it, but definitely someone who can kind of firm up that part of the pitch is absolutely, absolutely essential. And if we don't get it, then yeah, that's panic stations.
Matt, what's your hopes for the next 7 days? Obviously a win at home to Morecambe, but what about sort of additions to the squad?
It's hard to say, isn't it? We didn't do stuff very fast, by which I mean it was a little bit disheartening that we've had, I guess, diagnosable problems for, you maybe say, a few months. And maybe I'm naive or overly optimistic.
Definitely a few months.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not being over optimistic about where the problems are. I meant more, I guess, this juvenile hope that on January the 1st or 2nd, we would announce a centre midfielder has joined because the work had already been done. And that's not to say they haven't been working on it, because they obviously have, but it's a bit disheartening that it wasn't just done. Like, I saw other clubs making announcements on the 1st of Jan. Stupidly, I thought we might be one of them, or I really hope we would be one of them. It's like, it's a centre midfielder. He's good. He's done X, Y, Z already. Something to be excited about. The cover we did get was for the two most recent problems we have, right? So it was like the centre-back injury, left-back injury. We plugged those. That's good. Like, that's good work. Obviously, shame what's happened with Seddon. Hope he's all right. Like, not a great situation. But that says, if you sort of, you know, there's no magic wand, you can't rewrite these things. Let's say Jones and Dunk didn't get injured. There's a world where we maybe haven't signed anyone at this point and we've just gone and lost against Bristol Rovers. And that's just like, that's just not on. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just, that is going to piss the fan base off. Jensen Weir's part of an interesting club. There's three former United players who have scored more goals in League One this season than any of our players, which I find quite curious. George's racking his brain already.
I'm just trying to think if I could weave like a Stockton joke in, so I can't. So
no,
not this time. Gone the wrong way.
Not this time. Maybe a three at the back joke. I don't know. But that I find quite curious. And obviously,
a back three of Victor Adepoyejo, Giovanni Brown, and Jensen Weir.
That's it. That sounds good. That's the kind of hybrid.
They're the three. If you're asking, they're the three.
They are the three. Tom's pretending he's just worked that out.
Yeah, you
I thought there were four. You picked that up ages ago, for the fourth, but there wasn't one.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, it's good where revision can get you.
The weird thing is interesting, but also it's that thing where with a fan base, not just ours, but I think all fan bases, when it's like, who should we sign? It's like Apaya, Will Norris, Michael Morrison. It's like, all we know.
Not Will Norris, mate.
Will Norris's name does not get
not Norris anymore, mate.
You know my point, though. It's like, I'm willing to put my hands up, and I have before on this pod, and admit that I don't know anything about lower league football. So when it comes to transfer windows, I have like not a clue who I think we should be signing generally, because I just don't know. Hopefully they're doing scouting and they've worked it out. So the Jensen Weir thing maybe is a bit frustrating because he was known to us, but other stuff we don't know is, did we try and get him back and they said no for whatever reason, or, you know, there's tons of reasons why that may not have come to pass. Whether it needs to be an experienced player or a younger player, I'm less concerned. They just have to be good at football. I think they have to like want to show for the ball. We're really missing Adam May's like ability to want to drive us up through the middle of the pitch. I think that's probably the main thing that we're just lacking at the moment. So whoever wants to come in and have that brief of like, you must show for the ball, pick it up and just try and break through the lines and then do something with the ball. I don't care how old they are or how experienced they are. They just need to be good enough at football, basically.
Matt, Tom's already answered this sort of Bonner out, Bonner in question from his side. I'm going to ask you a question that someone called Matthew, fittingly enough, tweeted in. He asks, keep with Bonner or stay in League One? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to shoot down another one of the questions we get. I don't think it's a binary state. The way that it's been expressed is just unrealistic. Unrealistic to suggest that if we sack Bonner and hire another manager, they're going to keep us up. Like, it's a guarantee of keeping us up. If it was, then you would obviously do it, right? Because fortunately, football isn't that predictable, because it would be an extremely boring sport if it was. I wouldn't sack him, I don't think. I think the way I expressed it to Tom on the way back after the game was, I'm not sort of measuring it over 7 days. It feels like the rest of January is quite important, mm-hmm. because it's the rest of the transfer window. And the lay down of the fixtures we've got, you sort of look at them and say, if we're going to stay up, some of these need to, you know, we need to be getting maybe, I think I said optimistically 7 points, but maybe six. Like, there's a points return plus personnel you bring in combination that then means he probably needs all of February at least to sort of see how it nets out, see how it plays out. As it goes, I don't think there's actually any, I don't think there's a situation this season that we could be in where we would sack him, unless it's like, I don't know, April and you're already relegated and you're long gone. And maybe it's like, we're going to start planning for next year. And we've decided that that's not with Mark Bonner. But even then, I think there's a logic to keeping him, because you could still make a case. He was probably the best person to then get us promoted back out of League Two, because he's done it before. Which reminds me of something Tom said the other week, which is Tom's obsessed with the idea that Peterborough may relegate us on April the 15th.
Oh, stop it.
It's really occupying.
No, Will Norris scores an own goal and we win that game.
Stuff that Tom has now said on this subject in the last few weeks have included, I'd actually rather we get relegated before the Peterborough game than get relegated by Peterborough.
Yeah, 100%. 1 million.
Yeah, which I can get on board with. I mean, let's just not get relegated at all. Would also be
funny if we're in a position where we could get relegated on the 15th of April. We're down. Like, don't Don't worry about it. Like, just get relegated in March. Because there's
March now.
Not March.
That's soon, mate.
Not March. Like, earlier in April than that. Then we can at least spend that particular football match just getting stuck in.
What else do you say? You said you'd rather spend 10 years inside, as in jail, not in your house, rather than seeing us get relegated by Peterborough. So, I don't know.
I mean, it would be horrible, wouldn't it? You know, you wait. Well, both of those scenarios are pretty bad, to be fair. But, I mean, having waited so long for that derby to come back, to have lost the first one in relatively disappointing manner, and then for them to come to the Abbey and relegate us, then maybe that derby doesn't come back for another year or plenty of years. That'd be a kick in the teeth, wouldn't it? That'd be really soul crushing.
If they relegate us at the Abbey, I'm going to smash up our toilets. How's that? How's that?
They cost £1 million.
Yeah.
This seems like a really fitting way to end our Blue Monday podcast. So, gents, thank you very much. Tom, thank you.
Thank you very much. The pleasure, as always, is mine.
Matthew, thank you.
Oh, yeah. And thanks to every version of Mark Bonner who tweeted us questions this week. Much appreciated.
And listeners, you can thank us because there's one member of UTAS who messaged us this evening saying, if we don't win next week, we go down. Whereas Tom and Matt have disproven that theory. So we'll see you again next Monday to talk about beating Morecambe.